relaxing while we're riding in a Greyhound bus. We're seeing all the scenery in Comfort Plus.
Greyhound Canada announced Monday afternoon that it would be ending all of its service in the prairies and all but one of its routes in BC. These aren't the first service cuts the company has made, but they are the first total cuts to an entire region. This is almost half the country. Declining ridership was the reason given, but declining ridership, of course, doesn't mean no ridership. The prairies and BC especially are huge geographically, and outside of big cities, long drives from place to place are a way of life. Long drives and bus rides. Rural communities don't usually have all the necessities, and for anyone who can't drive a city over to, say, a medical appointment or to visit family, the bus is it. There's nothing else. Greyhound has been running some of these routes since 1929.
Lucky us in a Greyhound bus.
What happens to these towns when the bus finally stops? And what, if anything, should the governments be doing about it? We called our reporters who were on the ground across Western Canada trying to figure it out. It's July 11th, I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. We start in Alberta with Caitlin Lee, a reporter at 660 News in Calgary.
You know, it seemed like it came as a bit of a surprise to everyone, people in the newsroom, people who work for the company even, and of course, people who ride. I don't know if it should have been as much of a surprise. There have been a lot of cutbacks over the years to routes and the number of buses going to and fro. That started back in 2012, but I don't think anyone thought that this would just completely be cut off in Western Canada.
Yeah, so it's one thing to sort of slowly decline the number of routes and make them more infrequent, but what happens to a town when the bus service is cut off? What kind of towns are we talking about here?
I think we're talking about a lot of rural communities. There are other, you know, alternatives in bigger cities like Calgary, of course, the other buses that can go to and from cities, but in smaller towns, this might be the only way people can get to the big city or from town to town, especially people who, of course, don't have a driver's license, don't have a car. We don't have Via Rail service out here anymore either. That got cut back in 1990. So it's a very key service for a lot of people in smaller rural areas.
In a landscape as kind of spaced out as a lot of the prairies are, what does that kind of long bus ride symbolize?
You know, I think it symbolizes a kind of freedom. I'm from Ontario, so I know it's a little shorter of a drive to get to lots of different communities. But out here, people are just used to driving longer. But of course, if you don't have a mode of transportation, then you can't go and see the same things as other people. You can't go and see the mountains. You can't go and see other attractions, maybe the Calgary Stampede, which is happening right now. So it's definitely a sort of freedom, but it's also maybe visiting family or maybe going to see a specialist, maybe some sort of medical care. So it can also mean not just freedom, but an essential medical service.
Right. And what's some of the reaction been from some people that you've talked to?
We actually went out to one of the Greyhound depots here in Calgary yesterday. Not a lot of people hanging out there, but the few people that were very disappointed by this decision just because this is the cheapest option out there. There were a couple people who were actually traveling the country by Greyhound. That could be very expensive, obviously, if you're driving, if you're taking an airplane across the country. Again, I'm from Ontario. I travel back home a lot, so I know air travel is expensive in this country.
Is Greyhound a Canadian company?
It's an American company.
Do they understand the prairies and the market there?
Well, that's actually pretty interesting. We talked to a local union rep, the ATU Local 1374, Eric Carr, who is out here.
Nobody thought it would be a total shutdown from Sudbury all the way west, right? And we didn't see that coming, that's for sure.
He was talking about how for many years they've been trying to give feedback to this company and they felt as Canadians and Canadian employees that they weren't being heard as much as the American market, that because it was an American company, they were very focused on the American routes or the routes from Canada to the United States and not the ones within Canada. So maybe they, you know, gave feedback on ways to improve the service or attract more riders. For instance, you know, not having as many night routes and having more daytime buses, but they just didn't feel like they were being heard.
We have a national train service. What duty does the government have to ensure that there's a public transportation option for people in its, you know, non-big city communities?
You know, it seems like, at least here in Alberta, that the government feels like they do have a responsibility. Obviously, they're not making any commitments or any declarations or saying they're going to do anything specific now. The transportation minister here has said, you know, he's going to look into it. He's going to see how many people are impacted.
And see what role there is or there may be making sure that all Albertans have access to the transportation they need.
They've already been studying here, doing a pilot project on rural bus service. So it's definitely a concern on their minds. They want to make sure that people in these more isolated communities have access not only to essential medical service, you know, their family, but to the same kind of things that other people do.
Right. And these buses don't just carry people. They also carry supplies. One of the items that was mentioned is blood. What happens to that when the service stops?
It's kind of an unanswered question right now. I know there are other items that are also transported by Greyhound. I think one of the ones that was mentioned by the union rep was tractor parts, which is very appropriate for rural communities. There are still freight trains, so the freight service could be by train. It could be by transport truck. But yeah, not sure at the moment who will be picking up the slack from Greyhound.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is the so-called Highway of Tears in BC, but also just how this will affect Indigenous communities, because I know one of the problems is people hitchhiking on those roads. And obviously with less bus service, that could be worse.
Yes, especially with the inquiry going on right now, missing and murdered Indigenous women. This is very fresh on people's minds. They don't want to be putting people in danger. They don't want to perpetuate these problems. And I know that a chief in Manitoba has brought this forward. They really want someone to come in and fill this gap. Again, this is a common way for people to get to medical appointments in northern communities, in First Nation northern communities. So it's really an essential service for them.
The prairies are the biggest region affected by Greyhound's cuts, but maybe not the most dangerous. In British Columbia, road conditions can make driving all but impossible for people who aren't experienced. That's where the bus comes in, unless you want to pay hundreds of dollars for plane tickets to fly in province. Kayla Butler at News 1130 in Vancouver has been looking at this from a BC angle.
There are some people saying, you know, it's a business and they can't be, you know, held responsible for a service that is, quote, vital if it's a private industry. But we've also had a reaction come in from, you know, parents whose kids, or adult kids, I suppose, are going to school, post-secondary school in Kamloops and Kelowna. And because they live in the Lower Mainland, they might not necessarily have a car. So the way they get out to the Okanagan for school every year and home again is Greyhound. It's, you know, it's affordable for people on a student budget, and they don't have to worry about those big insurance costs and whatnot. And now they're kind of looking at, well, what now? I have to pay for a flight every single time I want to go back and forth, and that's anywhere from $200 to $500, depending on the time of year, right?
I don't know how we're going to get her down here. Looking at flights, the cost of flights from Kamloops to here is, you know, ridiculous, as is, you know, the cost of flights in all of Canada. You know, just a quick look, they're going for $241 right now. You know, at least the bus was reasonable at, you know, $50 to $75.
What does this do for communities in the Okanagan and Lower Mainland who are sort of far more remote than a lot of the BC towns we talk about?
We've been talking to people, and one person, you know, said it makes BC a really inaccessible province. People who have family in remote communities who might not be able to get out of those remote communities now have to find a different way of visiting or making medical appointments that maybe they might not be able to get in the smaller communities that they have to come to the Lower Mainland for. And that just, you know, cost of flights or even the train are way more than what a Greyhound bus ticket would be. So it's definitely going to put a strain on their budget, assuming nobody else picks up a lower income type service like Greyhound had.
It feels like a lot of this is a loss of the ability to move for people in rural communities. What does that say about the province and also about the BC government's responsibility to make it accessible?
That's a really good question. The people I spoke to are really hoping that the government will expand or at least look at expanding the bus service they've already kind of put in place, similar to Greyhound in the northern half of the province. When Greyhound pulled out of there, BC put in a new service that's very similar for the lower income or lower budget people looking to move around. And they're kind of hoping that with Greyhound and this mass exodus that the NDP will say, okay, we'll just expand the service into the Okanagan interior area. Not everyone is as hopeful, but, you know, the people who really rely on that service are desperate for that kind of mode of transportation, and they're hoping they'll step in. There's one parent I talked to who is divorced, and his wife lives in the Okanagan, and they have to transfer their kid on long weekends, you know, in between the two households, so he gets to see both sides of the family. And for them, it was easy, you know, to buy a $50 Greyhound round-trip ticket between the two places and put him on a bus and not worry anything about it. But now they're looking at flights that are, again, not cheap. And their only other option is to each spend 4 hours each way driving him just so he can visit his other side of the family, which is a burden financially. It's a burden on your time, especially, you know, working parents don't necessarily have all this excess time to be spending 8 hours for one day driving their kid for a visit, right? It's a strain on so many financial and lifestyle aspects.
What I would say to Greyhound is if you're so concerned about your decline in ridership, I mean, perhaps there are incentives that you could offer, or, I mean, I hate to say it, but raise your prices. I mean, offsetting the cost of, you know, going by flight or the time it takes for me to drive them, I'm willing to pay more to have that service. In the end, it's going to save me money and his mother as well.
So you talked a lot about accessibility, and you've spoken a couple times about planes coming in and out. Most of these people have cars. How many of them opt for planes or buses over driving, and why?
It depends on the time of year. I think a lot more people are willing to drive themselves during the summer. Gas prices tend to go down a little bit over the summer during summer driving season. The conditions are better. It's sunny. But during the winter especially, the Coquihalla is daunting for a lot of commuters, especially who maybe don't have a lot of driving experience, like maybe college students or people who just don't drive as much. And in the winter, it's tough for the province to get out and clear all the roads, you know, as fast as the snow falls, which can be pretty fast in the interior where all the mountains are. So a lot of people would opt for a Greyhound-like service where they don't have to worry about driving. They don't have to worry about road conditions. It takes a bit of the stress off. $50 round trip, right? You can get on the bus, put your head in a book, put your headphones in, and not worry about it. Whereas now, people are almost forced to drive if they don't want to pay, you know, hundreds of dollars for a domestic flight that really is like an hour long, maybe 45 minutes.
Right. So starting in November, no buses, the roads start to get bad. How many of these communities have plane access, and how easy is it?
I know the major centers, I use the term major a little bit loosely here, but like Kelowna has an international airport. So that could access, you know, Vernon, West Kelowna, Kelowna, maybe if they're really desperate, Kamloops. And then Vancouver and Abbotsford have airports sort of along this route where there was the express bus that a lot of people took that they will no longer have access to. So I think for the most part, it's not necessarily the number of flights, but the cost of a domestic flight. I mean, it's always been a story that it costs $500 to fly across Canada, but $100 to fly to L.A., right? So I think people now are having to find or hope to find space in their budget to either buy that flight ticket or are looking at, okay, do I want to risk it on the Coquihalla myself in the middle of winter?
Doesn't sound fun.
I would argue no. I have taken the Coquihalla many times, and I mean, it's a nice enough highway, but snow and ice and cold have a way of complicating things that would otherwise be a simple trip.
That was The Big Story. You can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can follow us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And you can subscribe, rate us, review us, tell your friends, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.